Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we have two awesome interviews. We'll talk a little bit about Roma, who have made it on to the next round of the Europa League and will face Man United next. Great for our podcast, by the way. So we have Steve Sciavillo on to give us an update on Roma. And at the end of the show, it's been a long time since I had my friend Alex Frasio from Gazzetta dello Sport on. We had a fun chat focused mainly on coaching in Serie A, as well as the under-21 team, the Italian under-21 team that he's been covering. That's at the end of the podcast, available to all, which I think you'll enjoy. Since it's Friday, of course, we have 1,000 names on deck with game picks, and we have a special part of the podcast for patrons. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. Worlds are colliding with Serie A and Chelsea, so we'll talk a little bit about that. This week, Alex, there's been a lot of buzz on a potential swap between Juve and Chelsea, which we were kind of expecting to happen. Maybe not with these players involved, but it so happened that it's one of your favorite players that we've talked so much about on this podcast, Alexandro. So what do you make, Alex, of a potential swap of Emerson heading to Juve, Alexandro to Chelsea? Are you excited about it on a scale of 1 to 10? How happy would you be? And more importantly, could you see this happening?
I'll go in order of how you asked it. Of course I'd be excited because I would be finally getting my wish that I've been begging for seasons and seasons and seasons. With that said, I even will admit that it wouldn't give me the same type of excitement as to when it was first rumored, where Alexandro was arguably maybe the best left back in the world at the time, or at least probably a top three one when I originally wanted it. Now, he's definitely fallen down a bit. I still think he's a solid player, but obviously he'd be coming to Chelsea to be backup to Ben Chilwell. Now, I think if Chelsea have learned anything under Tuchel, it's, well, this team does have the potential to stay in as many competitions as possible, and Tuchel also himself likes to rotate. So I'm not saying Alexandro would just be a total bench player, but coming over at this point in his career to the Premier League, if you're thinking you're going to get classic Alexandro, you're mistaken. And Ben Chilwell has improved a lot lately at the left wing back spot. Obviously, when Frank Lampard was in charge, Chelsea signed Chilwell for a lot of money. He's still young. So whomever comes in as a left back is going to be a backup to Chilwell unless Chilwell really drops the ball. So with Emerson, I would just say good luck. Good luck. Nothing against Emerson. Always have kind of liked him, hence the hashtag justice for Emerson. Some of that was that he wasn't Alonso, but I digress. And listen, he's a decent player. Like, he's a decent player, Emerson. Just a few weeks ago, he scored a one-time finish in the Champions League against Atletico Madrid. Like, he's got some talent. He's probably, this is a little harsh, but I mean it for a top level. He's probably average on both ends. I think he's average defensively and average going forward. I think he has the talent to be better than average going forward, Emerson. But at this point, at this level for like a Juve and a Chelsea, I would say he's average on both ends. But he's not old, and I think he's totally serviceable. And I actually got to say, I think Juve, and this pains me to say, I think Juve would be getting the better player just based on age and like who's still got more left in the tank. But then again, for Chelsea, it would be kind of what they need. I've talked about this a lot, but it's very weird having two players in the same position that are both around the same age, especially when they're young. So it'd be weird to bring in like another left back who is Chilwell's age. It would make a lot more sense to bring in an Alexandro. So to get to the second part of your question, could I see this happening? I mean, personally, I haven't been asking a lot lately on left back. I've been asking on bigger things like Haaland and Lukaku and Declan Rice and even Donnarumma. The left back thing, David, for Chelsea fans is kind of like a inevitable thing where we know one of Emerson Alonso is going to leave. I mean, we're hoping for that. And it feels like that has to happen because it was still a bit of a surprise that we ended the summer transfer window with all three left backs, plus Azpilicueta, who can sometimes play over there. That seemed like something we didn't really intend to do, but it was really tough to sell players last market. Not saying it's going to be super easy this market, but it should be easier. And I don't know, if Tuchel consists with this formation, then I think Alonso probably stays because he can be a left wing back. So, yeah, I could see it happening, David. I definitely could. But I will say, I haven't actually heard Alexandro's name mentioned in my circle, just because then you technically have to get rid of Alonso as well, or you have the same problem you had this season. You have three left backs once again. I don't know. Is that the best way to build a squad? To have three left backs? Hey, if you want to sell Alonso, by all means, go for that as well. You know I'm down. But is that the best way to build a squad? To have three senior left backs? Especially, David, you know Chilwell's on good money. You know Alonso's on good money. And I would assume Alexandro's on decent money. Is that the right way? I don't think it is. So, hey, if Emerson and Alonso are on their way out, I'm all for it. Otherwise, I would really only like it for the sentimentality part, if that makes any sense. So, I'm still into it. All right, David. So, I got to turn it back to you. Maybe you'll give me more hope or more pessimism. Do you see it happening?
Yeah, no, a lot of interesting points there. I remember when we actually went together and there was a bunch of other people. We went to see Juve and Gillette, and Alexandro was playing there. I think that was really the height of the hype of him leaving for the Premier League. And, you know, at the time, yeah, he was certainly rated higher than now. And look, I think Alexandro's actually had a good season. He's just a very different player than he was back then. He was much more dynamic, pushing forward. In a lot of ways, I feel like Cuadrado has become the wing back that Juve's offense is really focuses a lot on, and it's kind of flipped from Alexander. But I still think he's a very good player. He's become better defensively. He can actually even play as a center back now in a back three, so maybe there's a fit there. And look, you know, this is also, big part of this would be a financial reasons. We've been talking about how Juve is going to continue doing these swaps. There was the Pjanic Artur one. In January, they did a swap with Marseille of younger players. They just do these deals to get the plusvalenza in the short term. And look, Alexandro, you look at Juve's squad, him and Dybala are the two most logical players to make a profit on. Yeah, you could say Ramsey, Rabiot, because they have basically no amortization and they're a pure profit, but it's very hard to move those salaries. We saw there was no market whatsoever to take Eriksen off Inter's hand and just pay his wages in January. So to me, Dybala and Alexandra have been at Juve for a while. They still have a market. They have low amortization and they would bring in a big profit. So it makes sense. Juve and Chelsea, we know, have a very good relationship. I think most Chelsea fans would say it's probably more one-sided towards Juve. And I kind of tend to agree with you that maybe Juve here gets the better player in the long run, but maybe in the short term, it's very good for Chelsea. So I could absolutely see it happening. I do expect Juve and Chelsea to do business in the next window. Let's see if it's this one. But I actually think there's a decent chance of this because Juve has to raise a lot of money in plusvalenza by June 30th. And Alexandro just absolutely checks the box of a player that could make that happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to keep our eye on. And I definitely am interested with you saying you expect them to do business because, hey, we have another player or two, a certain midfielder who might want to return to Italy. All right. So, David, talking about Juventus and talking about perhaps player movement, a keeper that I still have been surprised about him being this good and solid and strong for Juventus is Szczęsny. I really have been because I think when he played at Arsenal, I didn't take him all that seriously, but he's definitely been someone who's at the very least been someone you can't joke about. So could you see him actually leaving Juve and perhaps going to my beloved Tottenham Spurs if maybe Juve can snag Donnarumma out of nowhere?
Yeah, so a couple. Let's unpack this one from a different angle. So we just talked about how Juve needs to raise a lot of money by June 30th. So Szczęsny, in a way, would turn a big profit because they didn't pay that much to sign him. I think it was $50 million, and this was a while back. This was 4 years ago. So, yeah, in theory, if you make a third, you could really – and, you know, Woj probably still has a big market. You could probably at least get $30, $40 million for him. Now, I think right now he isn't at his apex. The game against Porto wasn't great. I would say has been his weakest stretch at Juve, but he's still a great keeper. So on one hand, you could say, yeah, Juve needs to raise a lot of money. And then there's Donnarumma, who is available on a Bosman. And we know Juve has a great relationship with Raiola. So I don't blame anyone for thinking in those terms. To a certain extent, it makes sense. But there are a couple of buts. Donnarumma's wage demands are astronomical right now. To me, I think if he's going to leave Milan on a Bosman, and I think that's very unlikely, it's going to have to be for a massive salary. So if Juve makes the short-term plusvalenza on Woj and then they add Donnarumma, yeah, they have a young keeper, they add to the Italian core, but he's going to want to earn as much as De Ligt, especially if he goes to Juve. Then Raiola is going to say, well, you're paying De Ligt this much. They are comparable players. As far as ability, I want that. I honestly don't see that happening. In general, I don't see Donnarumma leaving Milan. Now, do I think it's more likely than a couple of weeks ago? Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do more with the uncertainty of Milan making the Champions League or not, because it's both financial. Are they going to have the revenues from that? And even Donnarumma, at that point, Donnarumma's got to start saying, okay, I signed with Milan a few years ago when they were really bad. We looked ready to go back to the Champions League. We've clearly improved. But now if there's doubt about that, Donnarumma is going to ask himself, hey, am I just going to be stuck in the same situation for the next few years? But Raiola's negotiating multiple extensions for his clients with Milan. Is Ibrahimovic or Romagnoli? Is he going to like leave Milan with nothing to show at all for Donnarumma while he's negotiating these other deals? I don't know. I have a hard time seeing that. As much as we say sentimentality in sports doesn't matter that much, I do believe that Donnarumma has strong feelings for Milan. And leaving with nothing to show for it, that I have a hard time seeing. Now, clock is ticking. The Milik situation was somewhat similar, that Napoli was going to lose him for nothing. And they found in January there was this extra transfer window and they made this deal where they saved face. They made some money with Marseille. There isn't that now. So I don't know. Is it possible that at the end of the day, Donnarumma says, you know what? So Milan isn't stuck with getting nothing for me. I'll sign a short-term deal and then we revisit it to see. I still think that's possible. I know Milan and ideally doesn't want to consider that. They're like, look, we've made you a good offer. You have to multiple years show us that you love Milan. So I don't know. I still think there's going to be somewhat of a compromise. I'll say this. I wouldn't exclude Donnarumma leaving Milan, but I have a very hard time seeing him leave on a Bosman. And from Juve's perspective, as much as it would make sense to make a short-term gain on Szczesny, Donnarumma is going to want to be paid 2-3 times what Szczesny makes. Is he really that much better? I don't know. Hard to say. And I think Juve's financial situation is pretty dire. Their payroll is completely bloated. Like, look, their payroll is significantly higher than Inter's. And I think at some point they have to cut it. And I say it all the time. I think people really underestimate the impact of huge wages. I think all too often we think of the transfer fee, but the wages is a huge deal as well. But before, Alex, before we get 2,000 names, I have to ask you about Chelsea and the Champions League. A few weeks ago, Napoli outsider sent me a message and he told me that he thought Chelsea were the third best team in Europe. And he said Bayern and Man City were better. Now Bayern's out. City's still in. How do you feel about Chelsea's chances of actually winning the Champions League this season, Alex?
Well, David, it's 2021. And if you reverse the two and the one, it becomes 2012. And I think we all know what happened in 2012. So it's written in the stars. But all right, somewhat realistic. I actually feel okay. I feel okay. I'll make it kind of brief because you can go on and on and on, but we'll just see what happens. I would say this is certainly not the Real Madrid that won all those Champions Leagues a handful of years back. But at the same time that I say that, and I say that because they just have less bite. you know, an attack, it's Benzema or bust almost sometimes. Vinicius can have a good game. Asensio can have a good game. Eden Hazard, though, I mean, the sentimentality of him coming back to London is great, but he hasn't been the same player. Rodrigo doesn't play a lot. So it really is Benzema often or bust an attack. So they've lost a lot of bite. And who knows if Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane will be good to go by that time. So it still is the same team at the same time because of the midfield. That midfield is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It still is ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Casemiro, Kroos, Luka Modric, and that's such a good midfield that they have a player I really like in Valverde, who is a really nice younger player. They have him oftentimes not in the preferred midfield, or the other night he played right back because they lost Lucas Vazquez for the season, but now they have Carvajal back. So they have a lot of experience. They are totally beating Chelsea with experience at this stage and Chelsea's midfield, and it could be Jorginho and Conte because Kovacic might still be injured for it. They're at least going to have to be average against Real's great midfield. But Tuchel's got this team playing super well, really confident. I think that tie in the semifinal is fairly even. I really, really do. And then beyond that, you know, you get to a final, David, anything can happen. It's one game. Do City or PSG scare me? Of course they do. They should scare absolutely everyone. If it was PSG, though, Tuchel has that extra oomph, if you know what I mean. He was just with PSG and he'll want to beat his old team. And they, though, will want to go to the final this time and win it. And if it's City, I mean, yeah, they're really hard to play. But we're playing them tomorrow in an FA Cup semifinal. We have them again in the league. So I really rate Tuchel and how he thinks about football. And I rate Pep as well. But we have a chance. So we have a chance against Real Madrid. And we have a chance in the final. So I don't feel like it's three teams and then Chelsea's the random team. Maybe off of like the last handful of years. Yeah, Chelsea haven't been up to that standard. But under Tuchel right now, I feel like Chelsea belongs. So yeah, I give us a chance. I really do. So much so I'm really nervous. And if anybody has some calming tea suggestions, maybe if they're not necessarily that kid-like, you know, pass them on. Pass them on. But yeah, I think we have a chance, David. It really helps, though, to have Thomas Tuchel and Thiago Silva, who have a bit of this experience. Because if we didn't have Tuchel and Silva, let's pretend we had Lampard, who I love, but let's pretend we had Lampard and no Thiago Silva. Oh, my God. We're babies. We're total babies in terms of experience. So, yeah, it should be interesting. Well, all right. Speaking of what should be interesting, looking to games that are a bit more right in front of our face, let's do some game picks with you and Thousand Names. Who are you guys picking this weekend?
Great. Yeah, this is actually a very exciting weekend in Serie A. I have to say this Atalanta-Juve game is as juicy as it gets. This is actually really a key game. It could really swing things quite a bit for each team in the race for a Champions League spot. So let's start with that one. As usual, Thousand Names send me three games. First one. Juve traveling to Bergamo. Let's start with that, facing Atalanta. He has Atalanta, not surprisingly, winning 1-0 as a goal by Pasalic. The comment is that Muriel is going to miss a penalty. He says that Gasperini is going to destroy Pirlo despite his being suspended because of the doping issue where he yelled at the doping checker. Interesting wrinkle there. And Thousand says, that Atalanta really runs a ton on the pitch. And he says that Paratic is going to have to call Allegri because Allegri blocked him on what's up. And Juve's transfer window was awful. In Italian, Atalanta, Juve 1-0, Pasalic, Muriel sbaglia rigore, Gasperini inguaia Pirlo nonostante la squalifica per doping. Come corre la dea, Paratici ci chiama Allegri che l'ha bloccato su WhatsApp, mercato ridicolo. This is really a tough game because Juve could really use a result here to solidify their position for a Champions League spot. Atalanta has just one less point than them, but I don't know. I'm going to pick Atalanta. I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to go 2-1. I'll give a goal to Ronaldo, and I'll give Muriel a brace. I'm really looking forward to this game. Another good one. Inter traveling to Napoli. Other Champions League implications right here. Thousand has Napoli losing 3-0 with two goals by Lukaku and a goal by Barella. He says Handanovic is going to save a penalty. He says Conte is going to celebrate in front of Gattuso and is going to gift the Champions League to Milan. And he says Marotta without wearing a mask is going to be emotional for having defeated COVID. So all joking aside on that, all the best to Marotta. I was very happy to hear that he beat COVID. He was in the hospital for a little while. Tough game. I'm going to go draw. I know Inter have won a bunch of games. Napoli don't need to stay in the race for a Champions League spot. So I'm going to go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Lukaku and I'll give another goal to Osimhen. I'd like to see him have a strong end to the season. Then another game with Champions League implication, Milan hosting Genoa. 1,000 has Milan winning 4-0, braces by Rebic and braced by Leao. He says Bennacer is going to control the midfield with Romagnoli, nothing passes on defense, and that Pioli can see a Champions League spot even without Ibrahimovic. Mm. Milan at home at San Siro, even though no fans have struggled, Genoa have done pretty well, but I do agree. I think Milan's going to win, not quite so decisively. I'll go 1-0 with a goal by Rebic. So thank you, Thousand Names, for the picks. Always a pleasure to have them. Now let's get to our first guest. Let's talk a little bit about Roma with our good friend Steve Sciavilla from Chiesa di Totte. Okay, I'm very excited to welcome the next guest. We are literally recording a few minutes after Roma made it past Ajax into the Europa League semifinals. So I'm very excited to have Steve Sciavilla on. He's been on multiple times. He is a member of the official Twitter for Chiesa di Totti, great Roma blog, also a great podcast as well. We've had Steve on quite a few times, and it's always a blast to talk calcio with him. So Steve, without further ado, bentornato to Calcioland. Great to have you on.
Thanks for having me back, David.
Awesome. All right, so let's start here. I know you missed the beginning of the game, but based on what we discussed before we started to record, I watched the whole game, but I think you totally got the gist of this. What did you make of today's result? Did you expect the approach from Roma? Did you expect it to be quite so much suffering, or was this what you expected?
Yeah, this is pretty much what I was expected coming in. I mean, they absorbed a lot of pressure in the first match as well, and I expected up with the two away goals, up 2-1, having that advantage that, you know, Roma has liked to counter a lot this season under Fonseca, especially against the bigger sides. And knowing the way Ajax likes to play that possession-based football, I figured they'd be sitting pretty much with five across the back while Ajax had possession, which is what it looked like for the most of the match that I saw. Of course, it got very nervy at the beginning of the second half when they gave up that goal.
Yeah.
It was to Broby. And then, you know, the second goal was luckily called back for a justified callback because it was a foul on Mkhitaryan. But yeah, it was nervy. But I do like the way that they, held out in the end. After Dzeko scored the goal, they really looked like they found a little more energy to really hold out. I think that goal really buoyed their confidence a bit. And, you know, a win is a win, especially with the way this season's gone for Roma against those bigger sides. So I'll take it. I'm looking forward to United in a couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you this, because obviously Roma right now are the only Italian team left in Europe. I would say in Serie A, probably been a disappointment, although I'm not sure, you know, they are much better squad-wise than where their position is. But I think it's fair to say that the Europa League has given Roma fans more satisfaction. What do you make of that? Do you think it's also because Roma has a foreign coach? What do you make of this phenomenon in general?
Yeah, so first I'll say I'm glad to see that, you know, they didn't mail in the Europa League like a lot of Italian teams have tended to do through the years. I give Fonseca and the side credit for that because we've seen that all too often for many Italian sides, Roma included. But I think part of it is, you know, I figured it'd be a tight race in the top seven for most of the season. And, you know, about, I'd say maybe January, February, I started doing, an actual league-wide post for our site to kind of keep track of how the opposition was doing because everybody was so tight in the table. And then, you know, about 5-6 weeks ago, Roma just started really having big trouble. I think a lot of that was tied to the losses of Mkhitaryan and Vertu. I mean, the last time I spoke to you is when they beat Fiorentina, and that was a game Vertu got hurt, and that was like my big takeaway from that match. And you could just see how much that has troubled Roma in the league. You know, and they've had their trouble with big sides, but it also carried over to like the Benevento match and also who was they lost to a couple weeks ago, they lost to another like lower side, Parma, who's in the relegation zone.
Yep.
So it kind of transferred to there without Mkhitaryan and Vertu. So the league has kind of slipped away, you know, where I thought Roma would be hanging around the race for fourth. That might be out the window. I mean, their chances now of making it, I think, on some of these like projection sites, like 538, like 5%. So the Europa League has become almost the be all end all for Roma, especially with, for Fonseca, I'd imagine, knowing his job is, you know, teetering on the brink, probably
the league.
So, you know, I think the way they approach these last 2 weeks, you could see too that Fonseca is taking the Europa League very seriously in terms of the personnel he played Sunday against Bologna. He rested many, many starters. And I do give him credit because they got through Shakhtar, which is a pretty good side in Europe, and without, you know, some key players like Vertu, we've seen Smalling out a lot. So they've been doing it, you know, with some key injuries. The first leg against Ajax, no Mkhitaryan. So I think it comes down to, I think Fonseca has a pedigree as a guy who's done well in Europe before with Shakhtar, you know, so I think that helps. I also think maybe the style of play is more suited to Roma, the way he likes to play a little bit in Europa League than in Serie A, because they've had a hard time breaking down some of these tightly packed defenses in Serie A. You know, and not just the big sides. Like, they've come away with wins against teams like Udinese in the first half of the year, but that tightly packed defense gave them fits. So I think that's where Roma really lacks, is breaking down those defenses, because they don't really have guys who will take, you know, defenses on and beat them one-on-one. I think that's where they miss Daniolo a lot, physicality. And, you know, and in the Europa League too, the group stage was not a very tough group. You know, they you know, easily should have gotten through, and they did. You know, they were pretty favorable in the draw that they got with Braga. And then even Shakhtar is not the same Shakhtar as a few years ago when Fonseca was there. But, you know, Ajax is definitely a feather in the cap, probably the two biggest, you know, win and then draw this year. I mean, Ajax isn't like a top side like a Juventus currently, but, you know, they'd be in probably the top five, six in Serie A right now. So, it's a quality win for sure.
Yeah. So it sounds, and I agree with you, that Fonseca's future in many ways is tied to the Europa League. Do you think he has to win it? Do you think making it to the final and, you know, not making the CL through Serie A, but having a pretty decent end to the season is going to be enough? Or do you think, you know, no Champions League without winning the Europa League is going to be fatal for him? What do you think?
It's tough because I do like the work he's done with Roma. It is frustrating that they haven't gotten any results really against top sides. But I can see the growth of certain players, and especially because Roma has a fairly young core. I think he does have to be complimented there. I mean, he's kind of brought Rick Karsdorp back from destruction. You know, Mancini, Pellegrini, Villar, these guys are all developing very nicely under him. You know, and there are holes in the roster. So, you know, to compete with the top teams in Serie A was always going to be tough this year. But I do think he might be in trouble if they don't win the Europa League to qualify, especially because it's new ownership. Thiago Pinto was not the one that hired him. So I think there's always that added pressure there because we don't know what his ideas are in terms of a coach. I think if Petrarchi was still there, maybe he'd have a little more leash because Petrarchi would be tied to him a little bit more, you know. They would have been working together for a couple of seasons, but you never know. I mean, if they get through United and lose in a fluke way to Villarreal or Arsenal in the final, what's to say maybe Pinto might say, you know, he's done some good work, and, you know, if maybe they can, I would say at least hopefully beat Lazio and maybe, like, get something out of the Atalanta match or something that would give a little more confidence to management, because if they lose to, you know, Atalanta again and Lazio and then Inter, it's like, well, you didn't beat anybody in the top six all year. It might be harder to justify keeping him around, but, you know, I'd love to see him get a third year, just because not many managers get three seasons in a row in Rome. It's a tough place to get three seasons and really build something.
Yeah, I agree with you. And look, you know, I kind of like the idea of Sarri at Roma, to be honest, but I don't. But Fonseca, and I agree with you, it sucks that he hasn't been one top team in Serie A. You figured if he at least had one, maybe you'd say, okay, but yeah, and it's a good point. Not only is it new owners, it's also a new director. And a lot of times those people want to bring in their own guys. So next two questions, one's really more looking at this season, next one looking to the future. Let's start here. You don't have to go in great detail unless you want to on these players. But if I asked you, if you had to pick the five most impactful players for Roma so far this season. Who do you pick and why?
So my number one choice I had, you know, as an obvious pick in my head, I'm sure you know who I'm going to say, but I dived a little deeper into the statistics because, you know, I had a few names in my head and I really wanted to, you know, make sure I was going in the right direction, not just going with the eye test. So I considered Karsdorp, I just want to say, because I feel like he's really short up the right back position, but I left him out of the top five because that's been a problem for Roma for a few years. And Cristante, I want to give a little bit of a shout out to, too, for the way he stepped in as center back. But I didn't put either of them in the top five. I'll go from five up to one. And I started with Jordan Veretout at fifth, just because he gives so much to Roma's midfield. He's kind of the motor in the midfield. He's scored 10 goals, five from the penalty spot, yes, but also assisted five times. And when you look at like his more underlying stats that everybody likes to look at these days, his build-up play is the best on the team. He's got the highest XG build-up rating. So I put him there, and we really saw what we missed when he was out for the last month or so. Then number four, I went with Mancini, who I'm a big fan of. He's really starting to develop as a center back, in my opinion. You know, his progressive passing, he leads the team, his passes into the final third and passing distance just shows his qualities as a passer besides just being a center back. He really does a lot for the side. You know, he's played the most minutes in Roma in the league. And I think overall now too. And he's really growing into a leader on the pitch, which is something I actually talked about recently on my podcast. My co-host Sean is that Roma's really missing those leaders these days. And he's one of the younger players who's really stepped up with Pellegrini to kind of fill that leadership void. You kind of see it. He captained the side for the first time on this weekend. So he's really starting to grow. Number three, I was in between Spinazzola and Pellegrini. I ended up going Pellegrini three. Roma's new captain. He's also brought the leadership. I want to compliment him first and foremost because he's really improved his game on the defensive side this year. Something that was really an issue for him in the past. You know, he's not, you know, Daniele De Rossi at this point from a defensive perspective, but he's really become less of a liability, which is big for a young player, I think, and a player who wants to lead by example. And, you know, his key passes, he's got 50 for Roma this year, which is far and away the most on the side. You know, he's created the most shot-creating opportunities, goal-creating chances. So I put him at three. And then I went with Spinazzola, too, just because he's been so important for Roma. And they actually survived this Ajax tie with him only playing the first 20 minutes of the first match before he got hurt. But he leads the team in, you know, successful dribbles, carrying the ball progressively up the pitch. You know, and he creates a lot of chances for Roma. He's got the most crosses into the penalty area. And one thing that I've noticed when he doesn't play, Roma's attack is much more balanced when he does play. When you look at like the attacking breakdown, they're like in the 40-something percent range a lot of the time through the left side. So sometimes almost an over-reliance, I feel like, but he's so important to them this year. And then number one, of course, has to be Mkhitaryan. I mean, this guy has been amazing. We've seen how much Roma's missed him this year. In the past couple of weeks, I mean, it's really been trouble scoring goals up front without him. And these are just his league numbers. I mean, 9 goals, 8 assists. He's got 43 passes into the opponent's penalty area, which leads the team. 38 key passes is second behind Pellegrini. And he's also works his tail off. I mean, he's got the fourth most tackles on the team, blocks and interceptions from a guy who's playing attacking midfield. So he does it all around. And I even compared him to Lukaku and Ronaldo in their XG chain, which is like the build-up where they're not directly shooting the ball. And, you know, he's a 1.01 per match. So he's basically creating a goal per match without being directly involved in the shot, whereas Lukaku's 1.03 and Ronaldo's 0.99. So he's playing on that kind of level, and it's been impressive. And, you know, kudos to him because he's a guy in his early 30s now, and he's still going strong outside those couple weeks he was injured.
Great shout. Yeah, I remember, I'd say, about a third of the way into the season when I was looking at the MVPs of the league, I was like, man, Mkhitaryan belongs with Ibra, Lukaku, these guys that we're talking about. Like, he's making just as much an impact there. You didn't put him on the list, Cristante. He's been good. You have Mancini, and it's interesting. That's two former Atalanta guys, which usually doesn't work out when they go elsewhere. And they're legit good, especially Mancini, and we'll talk more about him in a second. But yeah,
and
great
even
go ahead.
I just want to throw in real quick, David. Even talking about ex-Atalanta, even Ibanez has been impressive at times. He still has those individual mistakes because he's a young player, but his numbers are very good too. You know, he could even be, you know, considered for the top five.
Sure. Okay, so let's talk about the striker position. So Dzeko had a huge goal today, no doubt about it. But look, it's been four transfer windows in a row where we think he's leaving and he ends up staying. And look, you know, regardless of his transfer status, he ain't getting any younger, as good as he is. So if I'm going to throw these three names at you for a long-term replacement for Dzeko, and tell me who you pick. We have Belotti, who's been linked to Roma quite a few times. We have Icardi, who has been linked to Roma in the past and recently now. And we have Vlahovic, who's been really awesome this season. So out of these three, if you could pick one, who do you pick and why?
Well, first, I'd eliminate Icardi off the bat. I mean, it's just, I feel like it's been like an ongoing thing with him. Then you get the drama and all that. And he's kind of out of sight, out of mind in Paris. But Dzeko's not getting any younger. Props to him because he played two strong matches against Ajax and scored the goal to that. Got Roma, you know, really settled him down. But it is time to move on. If you asked me this question about 2 months ago, I would have said Belotti, no questions asked, without hesitation. But Vlahovic has really given me food for thought lately.
Yeah.
You know, he's been on fire. He's now up to 15 goals on the year. Belotti's at 11. Belotti has assisted more with 5 versus Vlahovic's 2. You know, Belotti is a little bit older. A little more experience. I think Belotti's 25 or so, and Vlahovic is 20. So Vlahovic is showing he's got a real high ceiling, which is what tempts me so much about him. And it's really a tough call now. And I think a little bit of it depends on what are Roma's ambitions next year. Where are they playing? You know, if they do find a way to qualify for the Champions League, I think Belotti's a better buy because you need that experienced player, I think, in that kind of a competition. But, you know, if they finish 7th and they're in the Europa League again, but the Friedkins want to make a long-term investment for the future, Vlahovic might be the better buy because his ceiling is so high. And even if he does get resold down the line, he might have a huge resale value if he really develops the way we're seeing in Florence. And I think both of them could really benefit, especially Belotti, from having better players around him. I mean, you think about Pellegrini and Mkhitaryan feeding him the ball rather than what he's got going on at that mess of a team that's Torino right now. So I think his goal scoring would go back up. Now, is he the 26th goal scorer of 16-17? I don't know. I mean, that might have been a one-time thing for him. But I think at a club like Roma, he could push 20 goals. And I think the thing that would kind of – I still lean toward Belotti. He's just more of a complete player right now, if the price was right. And it a lot depends on the price, too, on the market, I'm sure, when Pinto can make these considerations. But Belotti's a little bit better of a passer, does more for the team, and – the thing I love about Belotti, besides his goal scoring, is his work rate is off the charts. I mean, you watch him. He fights tooth and nail every match for a Torino side that is on the brink of relegation. You know, I think they might survive, but, you know, he never gives in, and which is what I love about him. And I think he would be a perfect replacement for Dzeko, playing up front. He could hold the ball up. You know, he can make passes to teammates. He kind of does all those things Dzeko did in his prime. Maybe slightly less talented, but works for it. So I'm still going to lean toward Belotti, but I would not be upset in the least if Roma found a way to buy Vlahovic if he isn't priced out of their range yet.
For sure. All right, let's close on this, Steve. And I do recommend Steve should get a much bigger audience. He's awesome. I don't ask people to come on as often as I do if I don't think they're great. Definitely check out his work at Chiesa di Tocchi, both the blog, the podcast is excellent. Definitely check it out. So let's close on this. We've talked a little bit about them so far, Spinazzola and Mancini. If you had to guess, who has a better chance of making an impact for the Italian national team at the Euro and like the next 2 years or so?
So I think right now, and I love both these players for Roma, Spinazzola would be the guy at the Euros, just because when you look at the left back position for Italy, his main competition is Emerson, who I rate from when he was at Roma, but not at the level Spinazzola is playing at this year. You know, hopefully he bounces back from this muscular injury that's keeping him out for a couple weeks strong again, because he's been arguably the best left back in Italy, probably right up there with Teo Hernandez this season and some of those type of players. And he's in his prime at 28 years old. So that's why I would tip him to probably have more of an impact at Euro 2021 and then, you know, probably World Cup 2022. And because Mancini's probably, you know, the fourth or fifth choice right now at best for the Italian national team, because you still have Chiellini, Bonucci, and Acerbi there. You know, he's probably battling out with players like you got the kid at Inter over there, Bastoni, who's his biggest competition for maybe a roster spot, depending on how many players they decide to carry as center back. But I think in the long term, Mancini's got a good chance to make an impact. I think once, you know, Chiellini, Bonucci, and Acerbi, those kind of guys move on in the next few years, I really look toward Bastoni and Mancini as the future center backs for Italy. I think they complement each other well, a left-footed player and a right-footed player. They both pass the ball well, defend well. So I think in that term, I think Mancini will have the better long-term future because of his age. And he's also, like I mentioned, bringing that leadership quality to Rome, and I think he can bring that leadership quality to Italy too. He's from all accounts, I've read, a real student of the game. So I think it bodes well for him long-term.
Great shout. Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough. Always a good time to chat calcio with you. Keep up the great work at Chiesa di Totti, and I look forward to doing this again. Hopefully, we'll be talking about Roma and the Europa League final soon, my friend. Great job. Thanks again.
Thanks, David.
I'm so excited to welcome the next guest, one of our favorites. Been a long time since he's been on. Before we started recording, we're talking smack about his Perugia and my Padova. My dear friend from Gazzetta dello Sport, Alex Frosio, one of the best when it comes to tactics. We're going to talk about some of the coaching things in Serie A, talk a little bit about the under 21, which he follows very closely. So, Alex, always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Hi, David. Hi, everybody. Thank you for the invitation. It's always a pleasure.
Terrific. So let's talk a little bit at the top of the standings. So as it stands now, Inter's really is going to win the Scudetto. I think it's just really a matter of time. But do you think this season will be remembered more for the improvements that Inter has shown under Conte? Or will this be Scudetto be remembered more about Juve's failed gamble with Pirlo?
Both. I say both. If we are talking about what will be remembered, It will be Conte for sure, because when you win something, you are remembered. But for winning the Scudetto, I think it's both, because I just look at the standing. 1 year ago, Juventus had at this point of Serie A, Juventus had 1 point more than Inter has now. So for sure, Inter improved under Conte. But it's also true that that Juve did so much less under Pirlo. It was I don't know if it's a failed gamble, because I think they knew what to expect from Pirlo. They should have known that he would have struggled, because it's an experience. It's an experience, so you have to wait for that. And Inter did what we all expected. I think we cannot be surprised. We all said when they were out of the Champions League, we all said that they would have been concentrated on the Serie A. They could work one game a week. That's what they did. They always play with more or less the same lineup. They did 11 wins in a row, which is a big achievement. But it's due to this possibility to work one single game every week. And in that, Conte is a masterclass.
Yeah, well said there. So, you know, I've been thinking of Serie A the past, since the beginning of Juve's cycle with Conte, which he's bringing to an end. And I think this Inter, you know, I would say Sarri's Napoli, I think, was better. I think, though, they are better than the two Romas under Garcia and Spalletti that Juve faced. But to me, it's like I'm also starting to think, what about this Inter compared to Conte's first Juve? And that was the one with Matri, Vucinic up front. Yeah. So how do you compare this current Inter to Conte's first Juve? Do you think they are comparable teams? Is there one that you think is clearly better than the other?
They are comparable teams, yeah. I think that this Inter is for sure better in attack. They have Lukaku, they have Lautaro, they have Alexis Sanchez. Compared with that, Juve is so much less. I would have said when you just asked me this question, I said, Inter is for sure better. But then I think too, what was Juve at the time? They had Buffon, Chiellini, Barzagli, Bonucci, Pirlo, Marchisio. Not bad. Not bad. So yeah. I would say attack is better Inter, but in defense and in midfield, Juventus was better.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. So let's talk a little bit more. So you mentioned that, you know, once Inter was out of the Champions League, I think a lot of people felt like that was definitely going to help them in the for the Scudetto. But I feel like next season they can't really hide. You know, they are going to be a testa di serie. They are going to be in the first pot in the group stage, but you know, a lot's been made, and I know you are particularly interested in this. I know you love Guardiola and you follow closely the other leagues. Do you think Inter can be successful with this style of play, which, let's be honest, isn't probably the most dynamic offensively? Do you think there is a way that Inter can, say, maybe get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League playing in this style?
I say that many times on Twitter. I've been criticized for that. No, not this Inter. No, this style of play is not the style of play that is successful in Europe. In Europe, you need to be, you need a lot of quality, techniques, skills. That's not what Inter shows. Inter is a very solid team, but they never do a take on a dribbling. I can say that because I see the stats. They never do a dribbling. What we saw in the last 2 days, in the last week in the Champions League is another level, a higher level. I think that particularly in this period, Inter is playing two defensive style play. That is not what you need in Europe. I'm afraid that they are not fast enough when they build from back. We saw that when you defend too deep, you play against teams that can score you anytime. Because we saw, okay, Bayern didn't qualify, but they scored three goals to PSG that thought of defending. Mm-hmm. So you can't play that. In Europe, you need to think to score one more goal than the others, because you have to know that the opponent will score goals. And instead now, Inter is thinking, okay, we don't concede, we will score. That's not how in Europe works. I'm talking about the higher level.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the group stage. The last 16, maybe you can do it, but in the quarterfinals, semifinals, it's another level.
Fair. And I don't think it's probably a coincidence that Atalanta has been the team that has fared, the Italian team that has fared the best in Europe. Let's talk about the other side of Milano, which you are based in. Let's talk about Milan, which obviously they had a great 2020. I think they were the best Serie A team for the calendar year. Things have not been as good in 2021. And look, they won last weekend, but they've been pretty shaky. It maybe looks a little bit how Pioli had gotten off to that great start at Inter, and it kind of fell apart at the end. Do you think it's that bad that Milan, if they could go back in time, might consider gambling on Ragnic and trying to do a totally different project? Or do you think things Milan would still stick with Pioli if they could keep things?
I would have hired Rangnick, but I don't regret Pioli because he did a great work. And I tell you that, in my opinion, he plays a Bundesliga style. That's why I like it. And I don't regret him. Because they always play trying to attack. They attack with many players. They try to be fast. They try to attack in many ways. So it's a very German style. That's what probably Rangnick would have brought. I think that with Rangnick we would have had maybe something deeper in with the development of players maybe. trying to gamble on young players more than what Milan is already doing. But as a style of play, you know, I think Pioli is doing a great work. I like him.
Yeah.
You said the right thing. They had a wonderful 2020. My opinion, my impression is that something is not broken, but they look like they were living in a bubble.
Yeah.
They're not living in a bubble anymore. Now they can see the finish line. They can see, they see that maybe it could slip away. But, and that's the problem of not the style of play. It's a question of mentality, of what's causing your mind.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Do you think they'll hang on to finish in the top four? Because as we're recording, they have 63 points. Juve has 62, Atalanta 61, Napoli 59. Lazio has one game in hand. They are at 55. If we throw them in the mix out of these teams, two will be out. I personally think it probably comes down to Milan and Napoli. I mean, I have a hard time seeing Juve and Atalanta not getting in. I don't know if you agree, but you think Milan's going to finish top four, or will it slip away kind of like it did with Pioli at Inter?
Hard call. It's really hard to say. Because you say that with the standings, and they're all there in a few points. I think they will, because they have strong values. And I'm talking about what you feel inside, not just the footballing matter.
Yeah.
So I think they will. I think they will, because maybe Napoli will not be so... They lost with Juventus. They didn't have to lose.
Yeah.
You have to be able not to lose some matches, and they did.
Yeah.
So I think that Milan will do it. They deserve it.
I agree.
I know that football is not about deserve things, but they deserve it.
Yeah, I think they're gonna sneak in over, and not sneak in because they're there now, but I think they will hold on, and I think Napoli will be the one on the outside looking in. So speaking of that, who do you think was more disappointing this season? And I say specifically in Serie A between Napoli and Lazio, because Lazio, for a little bit, they looked like they were gaining the momentum they had last year, but just not that consistent. And I think Napoli, squad-wise, have probably the third best team in Serie A. So in your opinion, who has been more disappointing between these two?
I pick Napoli for what you said. I still think that they had the best roster maybe after Juventus, but we are close.
Yeah.
Yes, we must admit that they had a lot of injuries and COVID, yes, that was an issue. But I still think they missed a part of the season with all the quality in the roster. They needed to get better results. Lazio, just like Milan this year, they lived in a bubble last year.
That exploded
after the break for COVID. I didn't expect much from Lazio. I think they did the best going ahead in the Champions League. And I didn't expect much, actually. From Napoli, I expected more. I do not forget that Napoli, until two or three years ago, they were always fighting for the Scudetto. And they keep on spending. So... I think that they didn't deserve. They get worse.
I totally agree. I definitely find them the most disappointing team in Serie A. So let's talk about three managers that, you know, that are probably going to be on the market for an upgrade for a bigger team next season. So when you look at De Zerbi, Juric, and Italiano, if you were in charge of a team, which one would you hire and why? Now, both you and I really, really love De Zerbi. This has not been, 2021 has not been great for him. I feel in some ways Italiano is kind of taking his corner with that. So how do you kind of rate them? Do you still believe in De Zerbi over the other two, or kind of have you kind of changed your opinion a little?
You know the answer. It's the Zagby. It is because we appreciated in the last days the football style of play that is being played in the Champions League. And that's the kind of football that the Zerbi is trying to impose in Italy. We are a different country with a different footballer. Maybe for an Italian team, Juric is the best, maybe, because it's very intense, it's man-marking. It's very Italian style of play, in my opinion. A modern Italian style of play. But I still think that the Zerbi is the best. Between three, I think that he will go to a big team in the next future. Not necessarily in Italy, or better, very likely not in Italy.
Wow!
He deserves a big team.
Agreed. Okay. So I have to ask you this. I was talking to you before you logged on, before we started recording. You know, life in Italy has not been great with COVID, but I know you attended a couple of the games, both one in Italy and I think one in Slovenia. So tell me a little bit, what was it like to go to a game in person?
It's very strange, because I really like to go to the stadium. I think that watching live football is a completely different experience for what you see on the pitch, for what you live. Now, the only part I appreciate is that you can hear what is said on the football pitch. So you can hear what the coaches say, what the players say. That's very entertaining. But apart from that, it's not the same without fans. I think that the stadium needs his voice. The voice is mute now. It's not good. It's something that the atmosphere is weird. It's always like I remember when I watched my father's Primavera playing. Mm-hmm. There were like 20 people watching the game. That's the same as it. It can't be like this. You need the fans, you need the noise, you need to all the environment that makes football great. And I know I'm very lucky to go to the stadium to watch live football, but I still wait for the doors to be open again.
For sure. And I know you've been following closely this current under 21 as you have done. Yep. In the past. So tell me a little bit about this current team. What do you make of them? And tell us about three players that you think we should keep our eye on.
I can tell you that working with Under 21 is beautiful because it's a group. It's a team. There is a beautiful atmosphere. You don't have stars in the team, so that makes everyone like everybody else. So there is not a player that is a star, so you can say, "Oh, I'm the star." That's what happened, for example, 2 years ago. And you had Barella, you had Ken, you had Zaniolo. They all were little stars. Now we don't have big stars, but we have a team. And they are beautiful to say because on the pitch they help each other. Maybe they don't play the most attractive football, but they're very solid. What I like is that they help each other and they work like a team. And that's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And
nice.
But still we have good players, I think, with a good future. I always remember that Zaniolo can Donnarumma, for example, Bastoni, they all could play for the under 21, and Locatelli, they could all play for the under 21, but it's right that they play with Mancini. Say that if I have to pick up three players, I say first Del Prato, who is a defender. He plays in Regina in Serie B, but he's a very committed player, very good defender. I'd really like him. Is of Atalanta, so I'd like the next year that Atalanta gives him a chance because he deserves it. And then I tell you Maggiore, which is a little Marchisio, a little Tardelli Marchisio, that kind of player. He knows very well the timing of playing, so I really like him. And he studies journalism, so I appreciate him even more.
Yeah.
And third name is Rovella. Maybe is not an unknown. We know him.
Yeah.
He's still very young, but he's got a great personality. When he plays, he's a great playmaker. I think that he will have a big future, bright future.
So let me ask you this. What is more likely, that Rovella plays, let's say, 5 games for Juve, who owns him? Or is it more likely he's a Mandragora plus Valenza? Is Rovella 5 games at Juve more likely than Perugia passing Padova in Serie C this season? What is more likely to happen?
I think that Rovella will play games with Juventus.
Okay.
It also depends on who will be the coach. If it's Pirlo, for sure you'll play games. If it's not Pirlo, I can say.
Okay, very fair. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough. For those of you that read in Italian, Alex's tacticals analysis are awesome. Well worth the subscription on Gazzetta. He's a great guy. I love having him on the pod. Thank you so much for doing this, my friend. I'd wish Perugia luck if they weren't behind Padova, but I hope they are both in Serie B next season, my friend. And thank you so much for doing this. Always a pleasure to chat calcio with you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.